the buzzer been poured on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Cats and Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
The Cougars, for the third year in a row, have come to the kennel and come up clutch. 79-71 is your final. BYU is a winner. The nation's number one team at 29-0 loses for the first and only time this regular season.
That call courtesy to the Cougar IMG Sports Network. I'm Eddie Katz along with my co-host Seth Greenberg, and you're listening to Courtside with Katz and Coach G. So Gonzaga goes down, and they finish the regular season 29-1. They lose to BYU 79-71. We're going to cover that as well as what happened also out west between UCLA and Arizona, talk a little Carolina, a little Duke, and we're going to be joined in studio by Villanova head coach Jay Wright as the Wildcats try to defend their national championship and do what Florida did in 2006 and 2007. So, Seth, let's first deal with the Zags going down to the Cougars. As you heard there, the third straight year that BYU, despite their struggles in the regular season, the same team that lost at San Diego, they go into the kennel 3 years in a row and knock off the Zags. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah, uncharacteristic. Gonzaga didn't take care of the basketball in the most important part of the game. I mean, I think that's a big thing. The other thing is Eric Mika is a difference maker. Eric Mika up front, his size, his strength, his tenacity in this basketball game, his toughness in this basketball game, it was almost like he was going to take it to the Gonzaga front court. He wanted to send a message of some sort that he was the best big on the court. And in that moment in time, he was. And I think it was a lesson learned in a lot of ways for Gonzaga, because at the end of the game, who do you want to have the ball? Nigel Williams-Goss. Who had the ball in that basketball game? Josh Perkins. Now, look, Perkins is a good player, and good players are going to make mistakes no different than anyone else. But when the game is on the line, you need the ball in Nigel Williams-Goss's hands. And then finally, everyone's talked about Gonzaga. They need to be tournament tested. They need to have play some close games. Maybe they got that game out of their system, Andy. Maybe this teachable moment was good for Gonzaga. Now, losing is never, in my opinion, good. I love the way Mark Few talked about it yesterday after the game. They're having this remarkable season. Their team does fit. They've got a great chemistry and a great trust. So let's not just overreact to this one game. Let's just take it for this moment in time and move on. Does that make sense?
So I want to hear from Mark Few exactly what you're saying. Let's hear from Mark Few, the head coach of Gonzaga.
I mean, it's a fabulous regular season. I mean, to go 29-1 and to be where we're at. And, I mean, come on, we would have taken that, if offered every time. So we just got to move forward now. Now we can quit talking about going undefeated. Now we just got to talk about, winning the rest of these on the way out.
And look, I've talked to Few about this before. I mean, he gets a little peeved, if you will, when everyone makes everything about March, because they've had great regular seasons throughout the course of his career. And they've had great tournaments. They just haven't gotten to the Final Four. So I understand why he gets a little upset when people pick on that. I mean, 29-1,
crazy.
As you know.
Incredible.
It's hard to win.
They're the biggest game on everyone's schedule starting January.
And people don't get that.
They play Thursday, Saturday, which is really, really tough.
Staying on the road.
To me, it's almost what they've been able to accomplish is historic in a lot of ways. Not too dissimilar from Kansas or Kentucky or Duke when they're dominating. They've been dominating. They haven't been good. They've been dominating. And the way they've been able to do it. And Mark's ability to integrate players and get them to buy into the culture that is Gonzaga, to me, is his brilliance, his genius. So, let's not overreact to one game. Let's give BYU credit. Let's call it a learning experience for Gonzaga. Something, but let's not panic. Let's not, now we see the warts are, they have troubles closing out games. I saw a tweet the other day. Mark Few blew another one. That guy won 29 in a row. Are you kidding me? He's a brilliant coach. He's a tremendous communicator. He has the ability to empower players and earn their trust. He gets them to go into very tough environments and play at a very high level. Let's not overreact to one game.
So before we wrap up the WCC and Gonzaga, now that they've lost, the WCC tournament is up next. Gonzaga will be the one seed, St. Mary's the two, BYU the three. What are the chances that BYU, I guess I could say St. Mary's, but BYU, they're playing well, obviously, could beat them again and win this?
Oh, I would say 20% maybe, but BYU has good players. I mean, they've got a dynamic backcourt in Hawes and Emery, and they've got the best frontcourt guy that really people don't talk about. Eremika is a rebounding machine. He's a big physical frontcourt player that can run, is hard to keep off the glass, is active, can protect the rim. So they've got pieces that if they get on a run, they can do something special. So to me, BYU struggled defensively all season. Let's call it what it is. They've struggled maintaining a defensive identity. But in one weekend, can they do that? Are they capable? Yeah, but they also will need Gonzaga not to play the very best.
So that, I think, for the most part, keeps Gonzaga still as a number one seed. I think so.
Yeah, you know what, Andy? I agree with you, and I see where you're coming from, and they've got good wins. This UCLA team, though, has the two best road wins maybe in college basketball at Arizona and Kentucky. So, like, if UCLA runs the table and, say, Carolina runs the table and Villanova runs the table, and I think Kansas is a lock.
Right, I agree.
We'll talk about it later, but I think Bill Self might even have to put Frank Mason on a pitch count, whether it's in practice, cutting his practice time, or in games. I think I wouldn't say not play him, but I think that cutting him back might be, in a big picture, good for him. But if UCLA runs the table and, like, those other things that I just mentioned happen, I could see UCLA being the fourth number one.
No, I wouldn't rule it out. And the reality is it's going to be 1-2 probably in the West anyway. So,
but it's that first game. I mean, like, you know, we saw, like, Middle Tennessee was a really good 15.
Yes.
A really good 15. You know, as the bracket evolves, is there another 15 like Middle Tennessee that would make it harder for Gonzaga? Again, I'd have to start looking at who potentially could be the 15s. But
Vermont,
you never know. Vermont, who's won, I think, what, 16 in a row now? It won't be Middle Tennessee.
Right.
But it could be a Florida Gulf Coast, who's got legitimate size and athleticism in the backcourt. Now, I'm not saying they would beat Gonzaga, but they have high major athleticism and size. So you never know. I mean, there's so much pressure in that game. And the 16s, there's a significant difference between the 16s and the 15s. Athletically, size, toughness, experience, and success even.
So I think we both agree that they're going to stay out West, and they're either going to be the one of the two.
I think without a doubt that would be the thing. And it's like a home game. Just the one thing about the Zags, they travel.
Yes. And the two sites are in Salt Lake and Sacramento, close enough to Spokane. So they'll have an advantage in that first weekend for sure. And then if they advance out West, the regional final is in San Jose this year. All right, so let's stay out West. You mentioned UCLA. You were there courtside. 77-72 victory over Arizona. You know, look, Steve Alford told me, he's told other people this, that defensively that's where they could grow the most. And they have, clearly, since the last time they played Arizona. You were there courtside. What were your impressions of the Bruins?
Much improved defensively. Phenomenal offensively. Just the way they play, the speed at which they play, the flow in which they play, the confidence in which they play, the shots that they are committed to taking and expecting to make. But defensively, they're different. Their ability to play both man and that 3-2 zone. The 3-2 zone, and I'm tired of people killing Bryce Alford. Like, the guy's a great player.
Who's
He's a
still
terrific
killing
player.
Him? You say that, but who's
They're
still
fans
killing him?
On Twitter. It's embarrassing. The kid is a terrific player. I mean, he's really a good basketball player. He's a good passer. He's unselfish. He makes big shots. He's found the ability to drive the basketball. Now that I've gotten that out of my system, they've improved defensively. Being able to play two defenses, that 3-2 zone fits them. Ike Anabogu makes him a difference because he gives him a rim protector. Thomas Welsh, every time he shoots it on the baseline.
You pronounce that very well, by the way.
Thank you. Welsh shoots the ball on the baseline, you expect it to go in. There's no doubt about it. But Anabogu, when he comes in, they play more zone than man with him in. He protects the rim. He covers ground. He rebounds balls out of his area. He runs. He did a nice job of catching the ball on rolls. He's hard to keep off the glass. They've got six starters and legitimate depth up front. This is a Final Four team. This is a team that can win the national championship. They're better defensively than you think about it. In the last seven games, 10 fewer points a game they're giving up, six fewer points in the paint. Their field goal percentage defense has improved significantly. And they're taking some pride in getting stops.
I got to ask you this because I was on with Kara Lawson and Fran Fischilla last week. And Fran was breaking down Lonzo Ball's shot. And he was talking about how at one point there was discussion about changing it because he takes it from the hip and he kind of snaps it. It's obviously not the way, you know, people are normally taught how to shoot the basketball. As a coach, what would you do with that shot, especially at the next level in the NBA?
I wouldn't do anything with it because where his release point, where he releases his ball from and his hand position, his elbow, his finish is fine. And I didn't think he could shoot it off the dribble the way he shoots it. But watching him warm up, he gets it off pretty quick. So, I say he's Magic-esque. Other people say he plays like
Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd. He's Magic-esque because of his size. He's Magic-esque because of his advanced passes. The same knocks that were made on Magic Johnson, even though Magic Johnson was 6'9", about his shot, this kid's a better shooter than Magic was. He's got similar vision. He's a teammate. Like, the amazing thing about Ball is all this static about his dad and all that stuff. The kid is so poised. He's got confidence but not cockiness.
You never hear that from him.
The kid, his players, talking to Coach Alford, his teammates love him. Absolutely love playing with him, love being around him, carries himself with tremendous, tremendous class and poise and character and confidence. You know what? I think they go into the locker room, and when his dad says that crazy stuff, the guys go and go, man, how about your dad today? How about that stuff he said? And I bet the kid goes, yeah, you know, that's my dad, man. He's crazy. I mean, that's what happens.
I know.
Like people say, well, you know, people in the NBA, they're going to worry about, you know, all the crazy stuff his dad says. You know, the stuff he said about Steph Curry, the stuff he said. You know what? Those kids go into the locker room. I'm telling you, this is what happens. One of those guys go, Lonzo, you hear about your dad today? Oh, yeah, that dude is crazy, man. He's crazy. He's just living life. The kid handles it with such poise. He never changes his expression during the game. Never once.
And by the way, I don't think he said he would only play for the Lakers.
No, it was then, you know, he backed
off.
Maybe
they prefer it. And he's not, he'll play where he's going to go.
Yeah, I mean.
And, you know, the Lakers could get him because they're going to be up there.
Archie Manning did it for Eli. I mean, look. He's a parent, and you know what? The parents only see one thing. You're a parent. Your kids play sport. You see your child. You see your child, and you want to see the best version of your child. You want to see your child in the best situation. You know, you see your child's strengths. Sometimes you don't see their weaknesses. So he's being a dad. Is he loud? Is he annoying? Is he obnoxious? Is he over the top? Yeah, he is. He's a parent. It bothers me more that the younger brother gets 92 by standing at half court and fouling in the fourth quarter to get extra possessions than this crazy stuff he says.
All right, let's shift to the Midwest. And you mentioned Kansas, 13 straight regular season championships, which I have been clear on this. I am not comparing this to UCLA's national championships, but I do think this is better than what UCLA did in terms of winning conference championships. True round robin, better competition, tougher environments, all the distractions, different, you know, one and dones and all that. You don't have the same players every year. And the ownership that these players have taken on where they say they don't want to be on the team that doesn't win it. Frank Mason said that clearly. Bill Self has said that. So it's tremendous. So now that Kansas has done it, 13 straight, as we look to the Big 12 tournament, and we're going to discuss this a little bit more next week, but just overall, you know, Iowa State, Baylor, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, all could legitimately get hot and win in Kansas City. What would be your mentality? You mentioned maybe sitting Frank a little bit, Frank Mason, but what would be your mentality of what Kansas needs to gain out of next week in Kansas City?
Winning. Winning is such a, it's intoxicating.
It's a drug.
It's a drug, and it makes you feel good, and it eliminates self-doubt, especially that team. They know their weaknesses, and Bill's really blunt with them in practice, how he coaches them in practice. So it's not like they're full of themselves. To me, when they get to the tournament, they're going to play to win the tournament. And I think
one goes there to lose.
Yeah, and that's who they are, and that's what they're trying to accomplish. But right now, today, this week, and then a week leading up to the tournament, I think you control Mason Graham Jackson's pitch count. How do you do that? You do it in practice. All right? You limit their exposure, their reps. You short. Everyone's shorting practice right now anyway. And they've got a short bench, so they've got to shorten it anyway. Maybe you put them on a minute count in games. You know, what I mean by that is, all right, he's playing 36 minutes a game, or we're going to play him. We're going to play him 20. He's going to want to play. Now, here's the thing, the tricky thing they're going through, Andy, is that, look, Frank Mason's probably going to be player of the year. You don't want anything to take away from that, potentially. So you want to play him to the point where people recognize his brilliance, and it is brilliant what he's been able to do this year. But you also have to think big picture. And I think Bill's great at, I think, really, really good at having a feel for his team. He'll control his practice time, do more individual work, less contact stuff, more concept, more special situation. It's not going to over-practice him. And I think he'll be careful with his minutes. But Bill likes his team winning, and he wants to make sure they don't lose that edge.
And by the way, their season finale at Oklahoma State, that's going to be a monster game for Oklahoma State.
Well, Oklahoma State's in the tournament. You don't want to see them in a bracket.
I know, but I'm just saying they're going to be amped up for that game, not just for seeding and everything else, but also going forward to the Big 12 tournament. All right, let's go to the SEC. Kentucky's defense, the way they played in the second half against Florida, no De'Aaron Fox. John Calipari telling me on Sunday that it's a bruise in his knee, just doesn't know. It'll probably be day-to-day. They're going to have a very difficult game, and we talked about this.
Vandy's good.
Vandy is good, and Vandy's playing for their lives because Vandy
Vandy's won in the conversation.
Vandy won at Florida, and they end the season at Kentucky and home Florida, so they can play their way into the NCAA tournament. Your thoughts on Kentucky's second-half performance against Florida and what they have ahead this week?
32-14, that's what they outscored them to win the game. The number I'm impressed with is the 14. When the game had to be won, they sat in a stance and guarded. They kept the ball to the lane. They contested shots. They rebounded the basketball. So that's huge. Malik Monk getting to the line 11 times. So he didn't just settle on being a jump shooter. He attacked. That's huge. Malik Monk getting 18 shots. I'm telling you, for me, Kentucky to get to the Final Four, Malik Monk's got to average between 18 and 20 shots. Good shots. Like, he should be able to come off screens, catch it in transition, make plays, jump up, and get good shots. Kentucky ran better. See, when Kentucky doesn't guard, they don't run. And, like, why I was so upset after the Missouri game and even the Georgia game, it was ridiculous the baskets they were giving up. I mean, total lack of commitment defensively, total lack of defensive principles, giving up scouting report baskets, things you cover in scouting report, and you have a lack of attention to detail. They didn't give up those baskets the other day. They were committed defensively. They were in a stance. They were alert off the basketball. They contested shots. They got out and ran. And then Bam right now, in this moment in time.
Bam Adebayo.
The last 3 weeks, they've done a better job of getting him to the left block. He's got to get to the left block. Don't throw to him on the right block unless it's for a dunk. Get it to him on the left block where he can get to the middle, shoot his jump hook, or step through. You do those things, and I'm obligated to say what I see. In the Big Blue Nation, they lose their minds. Ah, he's a hater. He's a hater. No, I'm not a hater. I'm honest. My obligation is to say what I see when a team is playing well or a team is playing poorly. They were playing poorly. And if they continued to play the way they were playing down to their competition, a lack of attention to detail, they were one of those prime candidates to get bopped the second game of the first weekend. You play the way you did against Florida in the second half without De'Aaron Fox. All of a sudden, now Alvison said, wait a second. And Cal's tweaked some stuff. Offensively, they ran Monk off some different actions. They ran some misdirection. I think they're getting better minutes from Dominique Hawkins, who's, like, to me, a little bit of their X factor. So I think there are some really positive things for Kentucky.
All right, let's go to the ACC. Duke loses at Miami, so they've lost a couple in a row. No Grayson Allen, out with an ankle injury.
Resting him, by the way.
They got a tough week. Now, Florida State, different team, home and road. But Florida State, then at Carolina. What kind of red flags do you have for the Blue Devils in this final week of the regular season?
No, get Grayson Allen healthy. Because if he's healthy, they have a shot to get to the Elite Eight Final Four. Without him, they don't. All right. My concerns are they got 6 points out of their front court the other day. They got to get something out of the front court. Emile Jefferson's better than that. Now, they're trying to give Bolden and Giles a little bit more minutes. Pretty good, but those guys get lost defensively. They've got to guard the ball better. In a low-scoring game, they still had a hard time guarding the ball on the perimeter. Bruce Brown, 25 out of 55 points. Joaquin Newton getting in the lane.
Duke, couple runouts there, too. Yeah, they weren't getting back.
You live with the three, you die with the three. Well, long shots, long rebounds. Floor balance. When you're not playing with a point guard, it sometimes impacts your defensive transition, which it has done. So defending the basketball, getting something out of their front court, playing without a point. So, you know, there are a lot of things that impact it.
Carolina, are they the best team in the country, even though they won't be ranked number one?
They are one of the best. I think UCLA is the best team in the country. But I think Carolina is right there with them. I think UCLA offensively is elite. I like their depth. I like their improved defense. But I love the way Carolina's guarding right now. I thought they were terrific defensively.
And to wrap up this part of the segment, because we're going to be joined momentarily by Villanova head coach Jay Wright, the Big Ten. Wisconsin loses at Michigan State. Great moment, by the way, at the end
of that
game.
They're not guarding at all.
Okay, great moment at the end of the game when Aaron Harris, who's out for the season, was allowed to sort of have his
senior
moment.
Izzo being Izzo.
Yes. Maryland loses at home to Iowa. Purdue loses at Michigan. What do you make of the top of the Big Ten right now?
It's not a Final Four team. I mean, it's really, the league has depth. There's good teams in the league. I don't think there's a Final Four team. I'm not sure there's an Elite Eight team. It's a really good league. Michigan State, their four freshmen in the last five games, 50 points, 20-something rebounds a game, and 13 assists a game. It takes time for freshmen to become sophomores. Those freshmen now are sophomores. Cassius Winston's been phenomenal. Nick Ward's development, physically, mentally, mature-wise, his game has been remarkable. But, again, he's got this experience. Josh Langford's playing at a higher level, and Miles Bridges is being Miles Bridges. So Michigan State, they're not a Final Four team, but, man, it's impressive at what Tom's done with this team. Wisconsin's not checking anyone right now. I don't know where that's gone wrong. They're playing a lot of isolation basketball, which people figured out a little bit happened, and Nigel. Purdue's still a really good team.
Tough road game.
Tough road game, and Maryland was overachieving. That's my feeling.
And it was Dokic senior night, so good moment there if you saw that with Dan and Andrew Dokic. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't see it, but
yeah.
I heard about it.
Yeah, it was a good moment. All right, when we come back, we'll be joined by Villanova head coach Jay Wright. But first, Seth, why don't you tell us a little bit about New York Life?
Courtside with Katz and Coach G is supported by New York Life, Andy. When your finances are under control, you're free to think about the important stuff, like basketball. And New York Life can help you get there. New York Life is a mutual life insurer, which means they answer to the policy owners, not Wall Street. Become part of the NYL family, and that could mean you. Cool story, right? Start a plan today and find out more about being good at life at NewYorkLife.com.
And Josh Hart is going to bring it across the timeline as the senior. How appropriate. Josh Hart will dribble it out down to 3-2-1. That's it. Villanova is the outright Big East regular season champion as they've won their fourth straight title. That is unprecedented in Big East conference history. Final score, Villanova 79, Creighton 63, as the Wildcats now are 27-3 on the season. You gotta love it, Whitey.
And that call is courtesy of the Villanova IMG Sports Network. And joining us in studio, Seth, Villanova head coach Jay Wright. And so We just heard him wax poetically about Josh Hart.
You dressed a lot better today than Jay's here. Not him, you.
Thanks. I know, I did. Thanks, I had to make sure. And I went blue because I know.
You're looking good, bro.
Thank you, thank you.
That was Ryan Fannin, by the way. Not exactly an unbiased production.
Yes. So we ask you, what has Josh Hart meant to you in this program?
He's been incredible. You know, if you look at the things he and his classmates, Chris Jenkins, Darrell Reynolds, have done, you know, Josh won the MVP of the Big East tournament as a sophomore, as the sixth man. His humility, his ability to come off the bench and still have that great attitude and competitiveness as a freshman and sophomore, and then become a major force as a junior, a leader as a senior. He's just done everything you can ask of a Villanova basketball player.
Senior night, you've had back-to-back years. Senior nights are hard. Hard on the players, hard on the coaches, hard on the families of the coaches.
We saw what happened in Gonzaga.
Yeah. I mean, the emotion could be either intoxicating or exhausting.
And distracting.
How hard is that when you've had this shared experience with this type of group?
Well, as you know, because your daughter Jackie G is at Villanova, we have the senior class. We honor the entire senior class. So they get tickets to the student section above all the other classes for that game. So there's a party before the game in the Jake Nevin Fieldhouse for them. And we go and address them. It starts with that. Then the seniors come down through the student section, and you got the parents there. And it is, and you go off your schedule. You know, we're big on, as you know, Seth, we're big on our schedule. We do everything by the minute.
Now, do you do that if it's at Wells Fargo, too?
No. We only do it at the pavilion. So there are some years when our last game is at the Wells Fargo Center. We'll do the senior night at the last game at the pavilion. Because we can have a party pregame, and it's our, you know, it's on campus. So, it as a coach, I really don't like all the things we got to do before the game. I don't like how it makes me feel emotionally. I mean, I'm crying when those parents come on the court. I'm crying. I don't want to be crying 5 minutes before the start of the game, and I don't want them crying. I remember Darren Hilliard was in tears. I'm thinking like, this kid's got he's going to go against some killers here in 5 minutes, and he's crying out here. So getting through it is such a relief for me. At the end of this, I would like to say at the end, you know, we have our whole student section behind one basket, and our seniors stand up on the table. It's a press table, and they salute their senior class, and it's one of the great when it's over. It's one of the great moments for me. I'm getting emotional even thinking about it here. But this year, for the first time, the last game's at the pavilion, so we got the Big East championship trophy, and they held it up to the senior class. It's the winningest class in Villanova history. That class won the Big East championship every year they were at Villanova. Right. It was really special.
You know, Kansas is on an unbelievable streak, 13
straight.
That
one, I can't even.
You guys have won four in a row, and yet we all talk about how balanced and competitive the Big 12 is, and now comparatively the Big East. So if that's the case, how do you explain that Kansas has done it every year, and you guys have done it every year?
You know what? That's a very good point because it is balanced. Like we only have three losses. All three came in the league, you know, and we lost twice to Butler. So we can get beat in our league. Butler can definitely beat us in the Big East tournament. Marquette beat us. You know, they can beat us in the Big East tournament. So it's more, I think, who has the resiliency and the consistency to make it through a long journey than it is one team being dominant over the others.
Jay, like, you won it four in a row, but that year before, you struggled.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I know you have your new book out. I can push anything.
Comes out tomorrow.
Out tomorrow. what was the thing you learned most from that year before this run that's helping you guys have the success you're having now?
Well, We learned it. We did learn a lot. And just like from a loss you can learn, but from a down season you can learn. We learned at Villanova, we have to stay true to our culture. We can't try to emulate the Kentuckys, the Kansases. We're a different place, a great place. In a lot of ways, I think a better place. But we've got to get guys that are true to our culture, that want to come to Villanova, want to get their degree, want to be a part of our community, want to be a part of a team and a family for life. if you're good enough to get to the NBA in 2 years, great. But come back and finish your degree. Always stay apart, like a Kyle Lowry who has. So you can't be afraid to have a year where you're down if you stick to your culture. Sometimes you try to. You don't want to have that 1 year. So you go get guys, and they're not. They might get you through that 1 year, but they're not a part of your culture.
Yeah, having said that, like, I don't want people to perceive that, well, you wouldn't take a guy that potentially could be one and done, because you'll recruit that guy.
Definitely.
But he's got to be a fit. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. And some of those guys out there, I hope I don't get in trouble with the NCAA for saying this, but I think Gilchrist, who played at Kentucky, he would have been a great fit for our program. He was a South Jersey kid. We almost came down to us at Kentucky. But that kid went to Kentucky for the same reasons we wanted him to go to Villanova. He wanted to be a part of that culture. He's a good student. He wanted to get his degree. He would have fit. John just did a better job recruiting him. There are guys that fit. Kyle Lowry fit. You know, there's some guys coming up here who fit, but we just got to find the right ones.
So how would you compare where this team is at right now to where you were a year ago?
Totally different, Andy. Last year at this time, we were rolling. You know, we have a week off right here, which enables me to do this. We don't, you know, we've clinched the Big East regular season title, and we don't play until Saturday.
At Georgetown, right?
At Georgetown. So last year at this point, we were rolling, and it was just about keep everybody healthy. You know, just find a way to keep us sharp. Don't wear these guys out. Right now, we're just in survival mode. We've been playing with six guys. We need this time to just get – we're giving them 3 days off. We need to get physically healthy, mentally healthy, because, you know, Seth and I were talking about this more on a coaching standpoint. Practices have been difficult because no one gets a break, you know, and you're playing with six, seven guys. You're killing each other, you know. So we have to have these 3 days off, try to get Darryl Reynolds back in the next day or, you know, maybe Wednesday or Thursday. Get prepared for Georgetown. We need a good game against Georgetown to get everybody playing together, because we've won some games here, but we haven't played well. We're in a different spot totally than last year.
And what was the impact of not having Phil Booth?
That's been huge all year. And Andy, not just, you know, he scored 20 in the national championship game. We were counting on this guy to be a stud for us this year, but also a junior, right, and a leader. And also a body. He hasn't practiced. He has not been in a practice yet. So we don't even have him in practice. I sound like Allen Iverson, practice. So it has really hurt us. Even Omari Spellman has had some little minor injuries this year, but we don't have him in practice. So, and everyone has this stuff. I'm just saying this is where we are. You asked the question about where are we compared to last year. Totally different spot. But if we get Darryl Reynolds back, we could go into the Big East tournament rested. We got a shot.
Speaking of your team right now, Jalen Brunson. I mean, last year it was fun to watch the relationship you had with Ryan Archidiakono. I mean, you guys were in it together.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really, as a coach, you could see that connection, that there was never a time you weren't on the same page.
Definitely.
Now all of a sudden, Jalen Brunson's handed the ball. He kind of took it. I wouldn't say he took a step back last year, because he was really important to your team.
Yes.
How different was that for you not to have Arch? And how was your relationship with Jalen grown so that your team can be what it is today?
Yeah, that's been a real interesting dynamic on our team this year. And Ryan and Jalen were really close. And when the season started this year, I think Jalen missed Ryan a little bit. I definitely missed Ryan. But as a coach, you can't say that. And you definitely can't let the guys – they used to call him, you know, Ryan Wright. They know I miss him. They don't know how bad I miss him. And even with him, when I was texting with him, I would be careful not to say how bad I miss him, you know. So Jalen and I started the season trying to develop that relationship. There was ups and downs, nothing negative, just like me putting pressure on him to be a leader, me putting pressure on him to be more aggressive as a scorer. Then be less aggressive, be more, get the guys involved more, get a great feel. He got to the point, I would say, 4 or 5 games ago, especially when Darryl Reynolds went out, where he knew, I've got to take this over. And I saw in him the understanding that Ryan Archidiakono had, that there's times I have to take it over, and there's times I got to make everybody better. And I feel like right now, Jalen and I are probably very close to where Ryan and I were at this point last year.
How cool is that, to actually feel that relationship change and grow and the trust. I mean, I don't know if people realize how important that mutual trust is to getting a guy somewhere that he can't get himself and you need to get him.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And then when it's your point guard and you know you're coming down at the end of the season into crunch time, to be able to say to him, in our last game against Creighton, early in the game I said, yo, my man, you know, we're struggling. You need to be more aggressive. And then in the second half, I tell you what, I said, all right, back it off a little bit. We got to get everybody involved. And for him to just get that and be able to do it is so valuable, and you're right. And then you feel like so good about the relationship.
So we were just talking before you came on about Gonzaga and whether or not there'll be a one or two. The other one out west could either be UCLA if they run the table. Maybe it'll be Oregon. We didn't mention that, Seth. Could be Oregon. You've been in these positions, both sides of it. What's the difference between being a one or a two?
A lot of differences depending on your team. I think a few years ago, we were a one seed, and we had won 14 games in a row going into the tournament, and we won the Big East Championship. And people were saying to me, coaches that I respect were saying, Seth might have been one of them. It would have been better if you had a loss. And I would be like, that's BS, man. I don't want to hear that. Man. We don't want to lose a game.
No one likes to lose.
But last year when we lost to Seton Hall in the Big East tournament, Rick Pitino texted me. He said, you got them right where you want them. This loss was good for you. And I was still crushed by that loss. But after the end, if we had not lost that game, I don't think we learned some things in that loss that really refocused us. So this, I know Mark Few doesn't want to hear this, but this loss might be good for them. Because when you go into the NCAA tournament with a long winning streak and you get in a close game in that second half, it's not that you – it is pressure, but it's just you haven't felt that in a long time. And now you're feeling it in the NCAA tournament, and it's just different. When you – they have that loss now. So, you know, if they're 3, 4, 5 games from now and they get down, they're not – they're like, all right, we did this. We got this.
But
we're
what
not
about
afraid
the seeding
of
line? Does it, how much of a difference does it make?
I don't think it makes that – we've been a one seed a couple times, not advanced. Last year, we all year, even to this point, everyone was saying Villanova was a lock one seed. We lose to Seton Hall, bang, we get knocked down to the number 1-2 seed. Everyone says Villanova's going to Philadelphia. We don't go to Philly. All the Villanova fans have tickets in Philly. Everybody's distraught. Everybody's complaining about the NCAA. We go to Louisville, and all of a sudden – there's kind of a calm, and you're away from Philly. You're away from everybody, and there's a refocus. It's not the end of the world to be a two because you're going to have to beat a great team in the end anyway. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. Now, 1-2 is a big difference from 5-4. That is a big difference, but you're up at 1-2. It's not that much.
You give them 3 days off. You always talk about attitude.
Yeah.
You come back to practice after those 3 days. What's the first thing you're going to say to your guys?
We be here now. That's a big term. We be here now. Practice. The rest time is over. We got to get back to creating great habits right now, and it starts by the way we walk out onto the court. As you know, most times you don't meet with the team off the court before practice. I'll come down on the practice court. They'll have been out there shooting with the assistants. For that practice, we'll have a meeting before practice starts. So we make sure when we step onto the court, everything is attention and detail from the first second we walk in there.
Jay, before we let you go, you can't pick Villanova. Who else would you select as a team that can win the national championship?
Well, this is not anything you guys don't know. Kansas is, I think, similar to their team last year. Like I still don't see these as like this year and last year as like your typical Kansas, ton of pros, but they're great teams with veteran players. And the other team that I think is really interesting that's coming together and has a chance to keep getting better is Oregon. They've got a lot of new pieces, Peyton Pritchard being a freshman, Dylan Ennis being out there. And Dylan and I text all the time. I can tell he's in a good place. That's a team that could continue to get better here down the stretch.
Kansas reminds me a little bit of your team last year.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, obviously, Lucas not as good a passer as Daniel was, but he is who he is. He's always in the right place. And Frank Mason, the leadership skill of Arch. And that team has a toughness. Small margin of error, though.
Yeah.
By the way, it's not crazy to say. We could have a repeat of last year. Villanova, Carolina.
And then you know what would happen, just would so you know.
That. I would love that. I'll take it.
Book it today.
I'll sign up for it right now.
First of all, if that happens, you know what he'll come in and say? Podcast pop. He takes credit for it. Now, wait. When we have someone on and they lose, like, I don't hear anything from him. But if someone wins a game, all of a sudden he goes,
he learned. It's like those guys that run the high school all-star games that had a kid play one day in their high school all-star game. He says, I made that kid.
It's my guy.
All right, Jay, we appreciate it. Thank you. Book is called Attitude.
Thank you.
Out on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, and you can pre-order it on Amazon.com now.
I got my copy, hard copy, big time.
Thanks, guys.
I don't have one yet.
You shouldn't.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
By the way, it's great to hear Brent Musburger's voice, former colleague here at ESPN and the SEC Network, who has since retired and moved to Las Vegas. So, Josh Macri, our esteemed producer, what do we have in the student section?
Got a couple good ones this afternoon, guys. The first one from Alex Regelli at A-Reg Sports. Alex would like to know, what are Wichita State's hopes looking like to make the NCAA tournament?
It's interesting, Seth. They split with Illinois State. Didn't have a great non-conference, but they're on a nice little roll again. And we go back to the soft bubble, the weak bubble, which is the case, it seems, every year. And
no, this thing is marshmallow.
Okay.
All right. I mean, this bubble is softer than soft. It's a marshmallow.
They're an NCAA tournament team, in my opinion.
Andy, let me explain something here. All right. And so that people out here pay attention. You don't need a pad or pencil. Just pay attention. Wichita State has 27 wins. Right? 27 wins. Right now, they're playing dominating basketball. That's not even a question. They're an NCAA tournament team. Results-based analytics. You play them, you lose. They play, they win. End of conversation. I think there should be like a 7 or 8. They're a really good basketball team. Their losses early in the season, all right, they weren't healthy. Illinois State should be in the NCAA tournament. They're an elite defensive team. You lose to Michigan State. You lose to Louisville. You lose to Oklahoma State. Those are three tournament teams. If anyone else lost to those teams, they say, oh, those are good losses. Illinois State's a good loss also. They're an NCAA tournament team. I don't care what the numbers say.
Well, I'm going to agree with you. I think the Valley will get 2 regardless. All right, keep going, Josh.
Sticking with that tourney theme, guys, we got this one from ID Kelly 1 at ID Kelly 1. He'd like to know which
friend
of the 20. He is a good friend of the show. He says, which of the 23 or 24 traditional one bid leagues deserves multiple bids this year?
Well, first of all, the Valley's not been a one bid league.
No.
So I'm going to remove them. You know, I will add this. There's a couple of leagues that now are sort of shrinking down to one bid. For example, the Mountain West will end up being a one bid league. This is a tough one. I just don't.
None.
Yeah, I'm going to go none as well. I don't see any of the normal one bid leagues getting 2 bids this season. I mean, I get here's the only one. I'm going to throw one at you. The first time there is an Ivy League tournament. Okay, let me just throw this at you. What would happen if Princeton runs the table in the Ivy, okay, but loses in the Ivy League tournament final, hypothetically, let's say, to Harvard? Would you put Princeton in and get the Ivy 2 bids first time ever?
I think it'd be hard to put them in because of what they did in their non-conference. They lost to St. Joe's, not a good team. VCU is not an embarrassing loss. It was at VCU. They lost at Lehigh. They lost to BYU. I'm not sure they did enough in their non-conference to separate themselves. Here's my thing. They lost to some teams that are not in the field. And when you do that and you don't have wins against the field, what do you do? I mean, their best wins, as we look up here, they lost to Cal, another bubble team, Hawaii Liberty, Bucknell, which will be a tournament win. I think Bucknell has a legitimate shot. I don't think they have enough to show that bounce off their bad losses.
I just thought I'd pose it.
No, I think
you're right.
That's a good question.
You know, Conference USA If Middle Tennessee doesn't get in, they deserve to get in, so they'll get two bids.
Okay.
Middle Tennessee is an NCAA tournament team.
It's a good one.
A team you wouldn't want to see in your bracket, by the way.
And they won a first-round game last year.
That's right.
Against a pretty good team.
Yeah.
Last one for us today, guys, from Scott Mooney, at Scott Drop and Roll. He says, more teams are playing with multiple ball guards and
Seth
no point
ball
guards.
That's my phrase, ball
this
guards.
Is right up his alley.
Scott's been paying attention.
But Scott would like to know, aren't teams with pure points better suited for March?
You want to play starter to playmaker. I think if you play with two ball guards, you got to play with two small forwards.
Okay.
So if you have two ball guards that can make a play and you play with two small forwards and a post guy, it's not a problem. Short clock situation, you have two guys who can make plays. I have no problem teams that have two ball guards. Like you think about Duke. I don't think Duke's guys are ball guards, though, because I don't think Grayson Allen or Luke Kennard are hybrid guards. They're both scoring guards. Allen's being put in a position to be a ball guard and be a play starter. So I eliminate Duke from that conversation because they don't have two ball guards. But if you have two legitimate ball guards, I think you're fine. You just can't play with a legitimate power forward because you want another ball handler on the court. When you have four ball handlers on the court, you become hard to guard.
All right. So, Josh, where can people throw these questions at us?
They can submit their questions, comments, anything else to us by using the hashtag student section, fellas.
And Josh, where can people find our podcast?
I think a better question, Andy, is where can't they find it?
Okay.
They can find it whatever their favorite podcast provider is. We will be on there. But there's an added bonus if you subscribe to our podcast in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. You'll be like a preferred listener. You'll get some alerts about podcast news. You'll get the podcast first every time it is dropped, and you'll be the first to know about it. We'll shoot you an alert every time a new podcast is published. So that's what I'd recommend, but hey, it's a free country. You can do whatever you want.
And as always, you can follow Seth on Twitter at Seth on Hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at ESPN Andy Katz. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Katz and Coach G. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts. Courtside with Katz and Coach G.